Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Ballots have been mailed to all county residents and should arrive by next week. Now, if you haven't received yours in the next few days, or if you're not yet registered to vote, you can visit sdvote.com, the San Diego Registrar of Voters website, to find out your options to make sure you can vote by the November 8th election. Today, we have two very special guests. Our first interview is with Mejgan Afshan, a civil rights activist who is running for the La Mesa City Council on an equity platform. She's one of four candidates vying for two seats. Then we'll be speaking with Blanca Lopez Brown, a Lemon Grove school board member who's one of five candidates in the running for two seats on the Lemon Grove City Council. And finally, on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the most spooky and spirited Halloween happenings coming up across San Diego's East County in October, including a haunted train ride, pumpkin patches and corn mazes, a haunted amusement park, a spooky camp over at a local lake, safe trick-or-treating at a shopping mall, doggy costume contests, a fall festival, Haunt Fest on Main for family-friendly Halloween fun, and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Henry Migala with East County Magazine, here with Mejgan Afshan, who's running for one of the two seats on the La Mesa City Council. Daughter of Afghan refugees, Mejgan has lived in La Mesa for over 30 years. She's the daughter of lifelong union members. Both her parents were lifelong union members. She's a lifelong Democrat and a civil rights leader. Welcome, Mejgan.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, Henry.
Thank you for making time to join us. So tell our viewers and our listeners, because this will be both on our website and on our radio station, tell our viewers and listeners a little bit about your background. How did you get here and what motivated you? What's your motivation for running for the city council?
Sure. Those are great questions. My name is Mejgan Afshan, as you mentioned, and I grew up here in La Mesa. I went to La Mesa Middle School. I went to Helix High School. I attended Grossmont College, where I was the speech and debate captain on the forensics team, and then transferred to San Francisco State University. I have had a long a professional experience working in Democratic politics as well as civil rights work. And that led me to become a civil rights activist and advocate. And in 2020, I was one of many legal observers that were present on the May 30th protest that unraveled here in La Mesa. And so I decided to, in that experience, I decided that it was important for me to get involved and to start participating in helping all of our community members from different backgrounds be able to reach and engage with their community representatives.
You founded several organizations. You've been actively involved in your community. You're the founder of Borderlands for Equity. Tell me what that is and what it's about, what its mission and what you do.
So I'm the co-founder of Borderlands for Equity with Suzanne Arani, who's a civil rights attorney, and I am the public policy and advocacy portion arm of our organization. We are a pro bono civil rights nonprofit based in La Mesa, the only pro bono civil rights nonprofit in East County, and we help represent those that have been discriminated against on the basis of race, religion, gender, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. And it's really important for me and our community members to have somebody show up and continue to help our most marginalized community members.
You also founded the East County Justice Coalition. Can you tell me a little bit about the East County Justice Coalition, what your mission is and what your accomplishments have been?
So the East County Justice Coalition was born out of a need to address the bullying concerns and the bullying that was happening in East County. that was being directed towards our Brown and our Black and Muslim community members. There are so many refugees and immigrants, and of course, Black and Brown community members that are continuing to be targeted by police in East County. And we found that to be able to push back against what's happening and making sure we show up in with faith leaders and other organizational, other organizations that can be able to show up and stand for against injustice.
So are your programs in the schools?
No, what we do is make sure to engage with folks when something's happened. We want to make sure that we engage with folks and they know there's someone that they can come to and share what has already happened and make sure we're advocating for them at whatever level that they have experienced that discrimination. Sometimes it's dealing with law enforcement. Sometimes it's dealing with the school district, depending on the situation. We do what we think is appropriate.
Good. Thank you for that. I went through your website about your candidacy and I looked at some of your priorities for running for city council, including police reform, equitable housing, addressing the homelessness issue, and environmental justice. You mentioned that you were one of the observers at that May 30th event. The Mesa experienced this social unrest and the riot and arson. As an observer, what do you see? What did you see as the underlying cause of that unrest?
So the May 30th event happened during the pandemic in May 30th of 2020. And it was important to make sure what we saw was a lot of people that are disillusioned and disengaged from the community and lack the opportunity to be able to engage with their civic leaders and making sure that we're civically engaged with the process happening in our communities. Another issue that we faced was the targeting of young Black and Brown people who are in our communities. And again, when you have a lack of civic engagement, when you have a lack of opportunities for discussion and dialogue around the difficulties that our community members are facing, that will increase, you know, unrest, that will increase affect our Black and Brown communities disproportionately. And it's important. Everybody needs to feel safe. All of us deserve to thrive and live in La Mesa and East County. And we deserve to have the opportunity to also feel like we're being protected and not targeted in our own communities. And so that is an integral piece of our community and an integral piece of our campaign, because we want to create a more equitable future together. And we think and we know that our equitable policy platform will help us achieve some of the inequities that we've been facing as a community.
You know, after the riots, we went into a 2-year lockdown as if everything was put on hold for a while. And now we're coming out of the pandemic. There was a lot of work done on the police department and police community relations and the oversight committee. Do you think the police department is reformed? If not, what else needs to be done?
I think that the changes that have taken place are positive changes. Chief Sweeney has done a wonderful job hearing our community concerns out and addressing the changes that we've been requesting and engaging with the community in a meaningful and different ways. I also think it's important for us to continue to allow people to be civically engaged in La Mesa and participating on the police oversight board, because the police oversight board helps everybody in our community, including our police department, do the best that we can and be better. And one of the ways we can be able to continue that and making sure it stays and it stays alive and it stays active is that we ensure the ability of an independent auditor to continue to hold our officers accountable that are not doing the right thing. And we're not saying every officer is responsible for the bad actions of an individual that's acted out of protocol, but we need to make sure that those ways we can be able to hold accountable and really all of our law enforcement accountable is really important, because we want everybody in the community to stay safe and we want to make sure that we address the community safety as a whole. And that's the only way that could happen is when we make sure that we can show up and we continue to have a community engagement with the police oversight Oversight Board and continue support of it, and as well as making sure we have an independent auditor to hold those folks that are not acting within their protocol and their procedures accountable for their actions.
We're all coming out of this pandemic after being closed down for a couple of years. It's almost as if we're rebuilding the pieces that define our community. And one of the first social events that happened in La Mesa was the Juneteenth celebration. Did you attend that?
Yes, I did. We were tabling at the event, and it was a wonderful celebration that brought out over 1,500 community members. And it was such a beautiful day. The weather was lovely. And I think we need more reasons to come out and celebrate our diversity and thrive with one another. And Juneteenth is a wonderful way of which we can remember our African-American sibling struggles, as well as the diversity that is now really a beautiful fabric of our La Mesa and East County community.
You went on to talk a little bit about equitable housing and homelessness, which is a huge issue, of course, East County, San Diego, everywhere. How would you address homelessness as a council member?
So houselessness is a huge issue. And, you know, we have an ongoing issue and it's not going anywhere. And not just in La Mesa, but all over East County and San Diego County in California. One of the ways we can be able to address this issue is making sure we have equitable access to affordable housing. No matter how many buildings you build, if you do not have equitable housing access, how are people that are making less than $80,000 or $75,000 able to, you know, get into these places and make sure we secure housing for them and that we don't create a bigger problem with creating more houselessness in our community. And also making sure that we expand programs like the HOME program that exists here in La Mesa and was begun here in La Mesa as a pilot program to make sure we're expanding mental health resources and facilities, resources for the people who are suffering the most and that are marginalized in our community. And eventually we need to be able to make sure we have some type of shelter for our houseless community so they can get off the streets and we can make sure that they are not harmful towards themselves or to anybody else. Because as we learned in the pandemic, you know, the pandemic showed us that you don't have to have had COVID to be affected by it. So making sure you're taking care of your neighbors and making sure that there's folks on the street that get the resources that they need is a critical piece of making sure we improve the quality of life for everybody in La Mesa. And that's why we want to be able to make sure to support this equitable policy platform so that we can help all aspects of those marginalized in our community.
You know, many people talk about one of the answers for homelessness is building more houses. And I think I even read today that the county approved 10,000 more units. So what's your view on the appropriate scale, height, and density for housing projects in La Mesa? I mean, should we be able to go to high-rise apartments and high-rise low-income housing? Or what's your view on scale, height, and density of housing?
So regardless of how people view housing, we have an issue across the state and not just in La Mesa. We have way more people than there is places for them to live. And that's not just a problem in La Mesa. That's a everybody that is living issue. And we're not going to address that problem by, you know, pushing everybody out until they all live in Arizona. That just doesn't work. You know, as a community that continues to grow, you know, create families and expand, we want our community members to stay in La Mesa. And that requires us building new homes. We already have 7 to 8 developments underway in La Mesa. And so we know that those developments are going to be able to at least ease a little bit of the pressure that's happening here in our corner of the county. But more importantly, it's not enough. We have to be able to build more housing and making sure that we are able to keep the integrity of La Mesa and at the same time, making sure we place these homes and these developments in areas that can withstand the size that they have. You know, I don't have an exact rule like everybody has to have only 5-story buildings or that's not something that, you know, I've made a hard and fast decision on, depending on where it is located, depending on what the actual lot is and where it's placed in the city of La Mesa will make a difference. Is it close to public transportation? Is it close to major schools or intersections? These are things that do make an influence on any decision. And I look forward to making this decision with my council members and our mayor to be able to provide housing for those that have been struggling. You know, I know a lot of people that, especially during the pandemic, had to move in with family members because either their housing was insecure or they wanted to be able to save while they were struggling through the pandemic. These are things that are affecting at all levels. They're affecting all levels of our community in La Mesa, and we cannot turn a blind eye to them. So making sure we create more housing, more affordable housing, and making sure that housing accessibility is supported by the city of La Mesa is a concern for me, and also protecting tenants' rights throughout this process is a very important process as well.
You kind of alluded to this, and it's a good segue. How do you balance the need for more homes versus a concern over parking, community character, and preserving the charm of the historic downtown district in all of La Mesa? How do you balance that?
Well, you know, there's more of La Mesa than just our downtown, beautiful La Mesa Village area. And I grew up, not too far, just a few blocks away from La Mesa Village. I live less than 5 minutes away from the La Mesa Village right now. And I think it's important to know that the people who are wanting to keep the integrity of La Mesa, they're not coming from a malicious place. Nobody here is coming from an ugly, malicious place. We want homes, and we want a community that is reflective of where we've lived and where many of us have grown up. And we want to continue to provide that for the children and the families that we have that continue to move here and that are growing up here as we speak. So maintaining the integrity and character is a little bit different than addressing the housing needs, because it's not like we're going to take our grandchildren and have them live in the streets. We want them to be able to grow up, and we want our nieces and nephews and, you know, brothers and sisters to be able to have housing in the city that they want to live in. And so in that regard, we definitely want to absolutely support more development of affordable housing and trying to maintain the character of La Mesa in the style that we can always improve something that we have that exists. There's no need for us to go backwards in time. We can be able to improve on what we have and make it accessible to all of our community's needs.
Good. You also mentioned environmental justice as one of your priorities. Where do you see climate action as a priority for the La Mesa City Council?
Oh, climate action is integral to our quality of life across the board. When it comes to pollution, when it comes to air quality, when it comes to, you know, longevity, I want all of our community members, including my own family, to live as long as we can and is the best in the best ways in which we can. And that requires making sure to fulfill our climate action plan. Our requirements for the city of La Mesa are only here to be able to live up to and be able to abide by the statewide implementation of climate action goals that we have as a state of California. And our state governor, you know, Governor Gavin Newsom, has really led the country when it comes to making sure we can lessen our carbon footprint and making sure we can be able to provide for and improve the quality of life of our community members. Climate Action Plan is integral to what we do in terms of civil rights too, because many people don't realize that the climate justice activists have always been trying to point and trying to put everybody's attention on the fact that climate crisis affects our Black and Brown and marginalized community members disproportionately. And so if we can be able to make a greener and cleaner La Mesa and make it more sustainable, we have a better environment, not just for ourselves, but for the future generations that will live here. And I don't think anybody is against that. I think folks genuinely want to live a long life that's healthy and make sure that their communities are cleaner and greener and more sustainable for the generations to come, because people want to make sure to leave this place better than we found it.
You mentioned on your website you want to improve the La Mesa Climate Action Plan. What do you mean by improve it? What needs improving?
So there's so many suggestions that we can be able to implement that we haven't been able to yet. Something like using gray water. You know, we live in a drought. I mean, yeah, we're living within a drought. We have a climate crisis, and the place that we live in is essentially a desert. Why can't we be able to use gray water, you know, the water that you use in your home after you wash some fruits and vegetables or take a shower? Why can't we use that for other ways like watering our plants or making sure to use them to be able to water trees in our community? This is a huge benefit. It's a boon, and we could be able to recycle that water and use it for our community. If we don't address these concerns, we will continue regardless to experience these power outages, these brownouts, as I was mentioning to you before the call, and the things that are happening in our community, like these heat waves that so many unfortunately have either suffered from or in the most extreme cases died from. We need to be able to address these concerns, and the climate action plan needs to be implemented, and the suggestions of the climate action plan need to be implemented, and things that we haven't done yet like gray water can be implemented, and be also, of course, expand our solar panel usage and hopefully the continued electrification of homes and appliances, so people don't have to suffer as much these climate crisis concerns that we've been facing recently. I mean, we are truly at a turning point in our country, and we need to be able to, as a community in La Mesa, not just fulfill our bare minimum goals, but you know, hopefully be able to go above and beyond and meet the goals of the state of California, where we all can be able to improve our environment drastically and lessen the footprint.
You mentioned on your site also finding and creating a permanent site for the library and a technology and arts hub. How would you fund a permanent library and technology and arts hub?
So the permanent library, we have a library that's not permanent, and there is fundings that we have received from COVID-19 pandemic fundings, whether it's the CARES Act or other fundings that have come to the city of La Mesa that still are providing monies for supporting programs. One of the things that we had many, many years ago, I think it was made more than 50 years ago, the library that I grew up attending and being able to go with my sisters to used to be located at where the present day police department is on University Avenue. And so that library was actually connected to a theater and a gallery, and that was a long time ago. So why can't we have nice things? You know, Henry, it's important for our community to have a permanent place for children to come and be able to read their books. That was one of the most fundamental pieces of my childhood that I loved and my sisters loved, and the children now deserve it. They don't have to be my children. All the kids in our community can and should be able to benefit from a permanent library, and make sure that we have a technology center to help all of our community members that need brushing up on their skills or support when it comes to learning new technologies. And it will be such a blessing for all of our community members to connect with at that level. And I think that the monies that have been set aside for, you know, supporting businesses and supporting our arts programs should be also used towards making sure we have a permanent library located here in La Mesa, in the heart of La Mesa, and make it central for all our folks to be able to attend and to utilize, because our community deserves a public permanent library and deserves a technology center. You know, there is no technology center that is available in this way anywhere in East County, if you can believe that. And it is outrageous. You know, maybe there are some schools like Grossmont College or maybe connected to Kuimaka College that have a technology center, but that's not a dedicated space for our regular citizens that are not community college students. So we want to make sure to make these things accessible and available to our community members and residents.
We're getting close to our time. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would like the residents of La Mesa to know about you and your campaign?
Yes, I just want to say thank you so much for having me again. And, you know, this is a very critical moment for our community and making sure we create an equitable future together. You know, our equitable policy platform was created with our, not just our community members that are alive now, but for our community members who have been yet to be born. There are so many people and so many families here that have yet to be able to engage in meaningful ways with our city. And I truly believe when we increase engagement and civic opportunities, we also are able to create a more equitable life and improve our quality of life across the board. And I can't do that by myself. So I would love the support of our community members. And if you would like to be able to support our campaign, please visit our website at www.votemeshgon.com or follow us on social media on Facebook as well as Instagram. And please feel free to donate to our campaign. And I just got a call before, I just got an email before I got on the call with you today from Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs that just endorsed our campaign. And so I'm so thankful to her, as well as, of course, Supervisor Nathan Fletcher and Council Member Sean Elu Rivera and Council Member Jack Hsu for endorsing our campaign and really believing in our purpose and our campaign and what we can achieve in the coming election and hopefully the next 4 years.
You kind of took away a couple of my last questions. I was going to ask you, are there any most significant endorsements you wanted to highlight to share with people?
I can read your mind, Henry.
Yeah, that's good. No. So I don't know, in addition to those that you mentioned from Sarah Jacobs and Councilman Hsu, are there other endorsements? Anything else you want to share?
We've also been endorsed by Supervisor Nora Vargas, as well as a council member from Lemon Grove, Jennifer Mendoza, and commander, and also former candidate Dave Myers. And I'm so thankful to all the folks that have endorsed our campaign and that continue to show up for our campaign and truly believe in the work that we do. And most importantly, we've also been endorsed by the San Diego County Democratic Party, as well as the San Diego County Labor Council, and Unite Here and IBEW 569. So thank you to them, as well as the San Diego Women's Democratic Club, for their endorsement of our campaign and their belief in us.
I know you mentioned it already, but I want to give you one last chance. So if people wanted to find out more about you or volunteer for your candidacy or donate, can you share with people how they can find out more or do more?
Absolutely. As I said, please visit us at votemeshgon.com. It's www.votemeshgon.com. And it's exactly the same handle for Facebook and Instagram. Just visit us on Vote Meshgon. And we would love to be able to have your support, whether it be volunteering to Canvas, to phone bank, or to donate. We would love your support and be able to see you out here helping us create a more equitable future together.
Meshgon, you've been very gracious with your time. Thank you for making time for us. Thank you for spending the afternoon and sharing your thoughts and visions. Thank you for your interest in public service. And good luck. And we'll see you. Maybe we'll talk to you again after the election.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Henry. And I thank you to East County Magazine for having me and our candidates in this race. It's critical that everybody votes. And before I go, I just want to make sure that everybody knows we have our mail-in ballots that should be arriving by October 10th. And make sure to make your vote. And there's 2 seats available. Please vote our Democratic slate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Meshgon.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Elijah McKee with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. 5 candidates are running for 2 seats on the Lemon Grove City Council this year. Councilmember Jennifer Mendoza is running for re-election, and there is also an open seat due to the retirement of longtime Councilman Jerry Jones. Here at East County Magazine, we're interviewing all 5 candidates to learn more about them. Today, our special guest is Blanca Brown, a Lemon Grove school board member, active volunteer, and 30-year business owner.
Congrats on running for council.
Thank you.
I would love to hear what kind of pulled you into the race. What's making you want to throw your hat in the ring this time around?
You know, I've considered it actually for a few years back. And this time, because I know that there would be a vacancy, one that certainly had a lot to do with it. And then also it was time. I don't know if you knew that I had served as a trustee on Lima Grove School District for 15 years. And so for me, that was learning a lot of governance, having a lot of real-time governance training on the spot, being able to learn what are the requirements, you know, for the entity. And so serving for 15 years, I certainly learned quite a bit. And so certainly the timing was well. And serving, I think, at the, you know, at the most local level, it certainly prepared me to get to know the community, to get a much broader sense of the, especially in Lemon Grove, because the schools are very, the central hub, if you will, yeah, for the community, as far as many of the activities. And of course, we pull together, you know, the numbers of families that we do into our schools. So it just gave me a really good feel for who we are as a community, what some of the desires are, but then also some of the challenges in our community. There's nothing more that I could have done at the school district level with knowledge, with passing bonds with high ratings, infrastructure, learning to develop relationships and partnerships. And so it was time to bring it into the city.
The next, the next level.
Yeah. And the last one too. For me, it's about serving the community I live in. No aspirations of beyond this. Nope. I'll make that very clear now.
No run for the presidency.
Oh my goodness. No. I enjoy working at the local level.
What is it like to become a trustee for the school board? How does that process work?
Oh, it's very similar as far as pulling papers, making sure you meet all the qualifications, making sure you meet the deadlines. The process is very, very similar. It's just the entity that is different.
I'd imagine there's some things from those 15 years that you're able to kind of pull into this experience of running for city council.
Oh, most certainly. Yes, most certainly. You know, especially on the learning the different community groups, you know, knowing that we should get some support, if one should desire endorsements, things of that nature, that it all helps.
Last question on that background piece, but I'm curious, maybe one or two things that you're most proud of from those 15 years.
One of the greatest accomplishments, and it was as a team of five school board members, but it's that wonderful, beautiful, iconic Lemon Grove Public Library we see now. That was a big deal. And part of it is not just because we were able to pass a bond with a 76% approval by the community. That's outstanding. It just meant that the community was in agreement. And I think that's how things should move forward when you're going to make such a huge, we might see it as an improvement, but it's a change to the community. It should have the buy-in of the most of the community. But it serves, what we were able to do with that facility is that it went from serving just the middle school there to now serving an entire community, housing, community rooms for the whole community, just many services and programs that now radiate out from within that same building. So I think that's, to me, when we improve upon something, it should have that wider reach to a greater part of the community.
It's such a great resource. And it's there for everyone.
Yeah, so probably that is one of the biggest accomplishments. And then again, and for the community, a win for the community. And then it has to be when I served on, way back, I can't remember the year, it goes so far back. But when the state was pulling in, looking at Preschool for All. So I was part of the Preschool for All task force, sat on that, and sat on the county level. A lot of conversations with the state, you know, just many players. And as a result of that, then when the money started to trickle down, we were in a position to be able to apply for the funding and then open. Lemon Grove School District did not have preschools.
Oh.
We don't realize that. And so I am very proud to say that we now have a preschool at every elementary school.
Hmm.
And, you know, and if we look at what all research says about early education, that's probably one of the things I take most pride in, that being able to get certainly four-year-olds, but then also some older three-year-olds in to start getting them ready for kindergarten.
So that was like a process of giving enough resources to elementary schools to start preschool classes, like with teachers and supplies and everything. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. It was from the build out to funding the per child per day, funding staff, materials. So it was a big deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so just that we have it there is, you know, and again, it's, and I think that's sometimes some of the greatest accomplishments. And certainly for me, is that when I look back and it's now looked at as part of the education system in Lemon Grove, it is P through eight, not K through eight. And it's almost just accepted now when we can change things and make them not sustainable, but the normal practice now.
Yeah.
In our education system and again, in our community.
That was how many years ago? You said it was a number of years ago.
Oh my goodness. Let's see. At least, oh my gosh, over 15 years now. Probably closer to 17. I started serving before I became a trustee.
Well, looking forward, let's say you were elected right now and there's three things in front of you on your desk. What are those things? What are those priorities? Definitely, if you were in the position right now, would be wanting to see happen or work together with others to make happen.
Well, one thing I would love to take a look at is to be able to peel that budget, peel it really back and just almost disaggregate that whole budget, because I see it, but there's so much more to it, I know. And just again, the different funding pots or streams that come into it, you know, how is it that we are receiving the amounts of money, and can we change that? Because our budget, it's clear for everyone understands that the budget in Lemon Grove is suffering. And again, if we look out into our greater community, it's evident. And so again, you know, I can have all these wonderful ideas about wanting to fund infrastructure, police, fire, oh, so many more things. But if we just don't have the budget, it's really not realistic. So it's almost going all the way back to step one, to what is the budget? What do we have? But then how do we expand? And that's something I used to love to do with the school district, is build partnerships with outside resources, just as I explained with PFA in the state, bringing the money where, you know, we didn't have to tap into our general fund to do that. We now have additional money. When we did the library, that was, again, additional money with the county. So it's about building, for me, it's about building those relationships of partnerships that will invest over the long haul in our community. So certainly looking at that and how we can build upon that and then tackle the bigger needs here within our community, which are, again, it comes back to streets, it comes back to funding. For me, it would certainly be more patrols to be more visible, certainly in our downtown area.
Mm.
And that just comes from, you know, talking with the small business owner and the residents that are closer to our main corridor there on Broadway.
Yeah.
Those would be the big ones, is the budget, funding these critical services, and then certainly looking at our infrastructure and how we pull in additional resources to do something more sustainable with it as well.
Gotcha. And yeah, that all comes back to the money. It's tough, I know. What would be some ways to maybe increase funding? Like, would you be focused more on grants, like you're saying, and pulling in additional money, or would things like a sales tax increase be part of that agenda?
part of the agenda would start with certainly the sales tax. And again, it would be, for me, it would be designed very different from the get-go. Lots and lots of stakeholder input. It's the only way it's going to be. You know, we just failed terribly on the last one. But if I look at it, analyze it in my own little mind and past, I can see some of probably some of the areas where it was just going to be difficult to pass it. And part of that was the community input and a general plan for how the, I think the community, when I'm taxed, I want to know where that money is going to go. What am I going to improve upon in my community?
Yeah, that level of transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen on certain social medias, but there has been a bit of a lively debate going around about
related to?
It's on this like current events Lemon Grove page, and mm-hmm. all about doing an audit of the city, a audit versus a forensic audit. And no worries if you're not familiar, but I'm just giving all the candidates a chance to touch on that once we talk about money and the budget and things, if they care to weigh in on it.
So yeah, no, I have certainly heard of it. Even as I knock on doors and speak to people, it comes up. So my thoughts are that the budget is there. It is open. It is public to anyone who would like to see it. The backup documentation has to, by law, be there as well. As far as, you know, this is, when we look at the council, it's taxpayer money. And so it has to be so transparent. I know I've looked at it. You know, I maybe disagree with how it is spent. And again, some of the revenue streams, if they are designated or not, can they go into the general fund or are they designated for a special expenditure? I mean, it's, and even if you pull it online, if there's a question, I know that we can call in and find out. I know that any community member can also call and have a meeting. So that, do I believe if there's any fraud? No. If I believe that that it's not transparent, don't believe that, because I can go online and if I have questions, I can pick up the phone and have a question related to any of the items I should choose to inquire about. But I do also know that there is a way, especially when we're a seated council member, that if we have questions or want to bring up particular items to be discussed at a council meeting, that time and place when we're in the middle of an agenda and in the middle of a session, that's not the time, because it's not agendized. So we just can't. And I know I've seen this happen, and not just in our city, but where either by the public or by a seated council member makes a request for a certain document or budget item, they're on the spot.
Yeah.
It just can't happen because it's not the process. So I would encourage our community to also become familiarized when we're talking about the social media, to also be familiarized with the processes that are in place so that the public has access to everything they would like to become familiar with.
Yeah, there's a structure there.
Exactly. And social media has nothing. And, you know, and it's sad because it's a place for public, just, I think there's why it's called what it is. It's social media. But again, you know, it's where is the city able to take part in that?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, council are elected officials, and they have to, there's such a fine line they have to walk with being careful. And I think the biggest, one of the critical pieces in that is when information is shared, it has to be shared not with one, not with the group. It has to be very, again, transparent to the entire community. So whatever process is used for disseminating that information out to one, it has to be equal again to all the residents of the community.
Yeah. And within the council itself, you're saying as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think I would encourage anyone who has any questions, if they believe or feel that something like that is happening, come to council and request the information you'd like to see. Ask it to be placed on the agenda. I don't think there's any council member in any city manager, mayor, that would disagree or say anything to the contrary when it is asked procedurally the way it should be.
Yeah. With potentially joining this group of people on council, do you feel confident about the collaboration side of things with whoever ends up, whatever like the exact combination of people ends up being? You feel good about joining no matter who ends up on the council?
Yes. Yeah. You know, after 15 years over at the school district, there was a few different combinations, but I think that we all pull together again when we can take ourselves out of it. We are public servants. And when we can step outside of ourselves to do the greater good, wonderful things can happen for communities. It's a lot of work, though. It is hard to step away from our own personal ideas, yeah, our own values, even our own desires for a community, and then pull together as a whole group and then work in collaboration for the whole. But it, when it happens, wonderful things happen too. I'm hopeful.
Me too.
Good.
I'm also curious, you know, sometimes building and development disputes come to the council from the Planning Commission for approval, or sometimes they get appealed to the council. And in those moments, I'm curious how, if there's any particular trend you see yourself following or way that you think you would fall when it comes to like the development of Lemon Grove in residential and commercial spaces and zoning.
So I have sat through some from the planning council all the way to planning commissioners to city council. The process is in place so that everything is adhered to as laid out, especially in our general plan. And I think a big part, I've always said, has to do with the health, safety, and well-being of the community and its residents. What I would like to see in, during that process is that from the planning commissioners, to city council members, that we all receive specific training to when we see a plan, a development, that we have really taken a hard look at. What is the plan development? What is the impact on our immediate community where it is planned, the site? But then also, is it fitting within the general plan? And then also take a look at the general plan. Does it need to be updated? You know, does it need to be updated? And again, and because we can't have five commissioners interpret it one way, five council interpret it another way. It's just not, I think that sometimes what happens with that is when we look at it again from our own personal lens, then we're talking about looking at it 10 different ways versus looking at it for the whole community. And so I'll go back to that I would just have to exercise my due diligence to make sure that even if I disagree, don't think that should be there, it's again, what are the documents saying that will be approved? And again, and lending though, and once it falls into the category of this development is able to go to be planted here, if you will, then again, following through with all the regs, all the codes as it should be. And if we're going to make an allowance for one, we need to be prepared to make an allowance for all.
Yeah, which can be tough.
Yes. You know, and even that, when we make allowances, is we have to have a standard of when those allowances are made. You know, it can't just be case by case, again, because commissioners or council think that, oh, they'd like to see this project. And so, example, maybe there's not enough, oh, I don't know, outdoor space, parking, whatever it is, common area. It can't be a case by case, because I think we'll only set ourselves up then for criticism, honestly.
Yeah, that sounds like a good approach. Something sort of related, but kind of different, is this idea of unincorporation. And I feel like I know where most people stand on it, but there are some voices who sometimes call for Lemon Grove to go back under county control and to not be involved in any of this development planning anymore. And most of it, I feel, is tied to how the financial situation has been in recent years. But I'm curious where you fall on that.
You know, I think Lemon Grove is a charming place. And I know that many residents, especially those who have owned homes here for decades, would love for it to continue with its small town charm. But there comes a time, too, when if it cannot sustain itself, that has to be an option in order to keep resources at the level they should be for all. So that's why part of why I'm running. I'm going to go into this fighting to extract every penny from every dollar, trying to bring in partnerships that are willing to invest in Lemon Grove. That's the best that we can do. And, you know, just go in there and try to, again, to expand on these dollars so that we can continue to be a self-sustained small community.
Every penny from every dollar. I like that phrase. Here's one last more lighthearted one. What's just something about Lemon Grove, something from that small town charm that you wish more people knew about?
It is so, Lemon Grove is as diverse in its values, its beliefs, as in the people who reside in it. And what I would like people to know is that let's just pull together. Let's pull together and make the city work. Really, that's, you know, more than anything, it's let's pull together. Let's find the commonalities with our views, our values, the lenses we put on. Let's find the commonality and pull together for this small town. I think all the residents who have been here for decades deserve it as much as the young families coming in.
Yeah, that idea is for everyone.
Yeah.
Well, if there's anything else you'd like to add about your campaign, any endorsements you want to shout out, or just anything at all that you want to add on to what we've discussed, I'm happy to hear it.
You know, I do have some endorsements, and, you know, I have to tell you that probably the greatest endorsement that I have and I'm most proud of are the residents themselves. Nice. And so no offense to those who have endorsed me. I appreciate, I am grateful. However, I am here to serve the community, small business and residents, all families of Lemon Grove.
Nice. The greatest one is the residents.
That's it.
I don't think anyone will take offense to that, to hearing that. I wouldn't.
To me, that's, to have that and is actually humbling.
Yeah.
It just it helps to keep me grounded and central and centered as to why I took this on to begin with. If I keep my eyes on that, that is good.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Blanca. It's good
to talk. Thank you, Elijah. It is good to see you. Have a wonderful day.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, featuring Halloween events across San Diego's East County throughout the month of October. In downtown El Cajon, the 10th annual Haunt Fest on Main Street will be held October 21st. Haunt Fest features a pumpkin patch, costume contest, kids zone, carnival rides, and live music on multiple stages. There will also be craft and game booths, an LED rock wall, and inflatables. Haunt Fest will also show a surprise feature of Movies in the Park, and there's a car show. For more information, visit hauntfest.org. Spooky Campoween will be held the last 2 weeks in October at Camp Lake Jennings in Lakeside. Camping kids can enjoy trick-or-treating on the campgrounds, a spooky scavenger hunt, campsite decorating, and other creepy crafts. This event is only open for registered campers. You can register and get more details at lakejennings.org. If you're looking for a unique way to celebrate the Halloween season and ride the rails, you can take a ride on the Pumpkin Express hosted by the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association. The haunted train departs from the Campo Depot at several times each weekend with a final destination at the museum grounds, where you could walk through buildings complete with Halloween scenes, a pumpkin patch, and a creepy cast of ghosts and ghouls. Pumpkins are included in purchase for every toddler and child ticket on the Pumpkin Express. Passengers of all ages are encouraged to come in costume. Tickets are available at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum site at psrm.org/pumpkin. The Haunted Amusement Park Scare Trail will be hosted in El Cajon at the old Marshall Scotty's Playland this year. This event was formerly known as Scotty's Scare Trail. There are carnival rides from the 1960s and bumper cars where riders experience out-of-this-world visuals with 3D glasses. You can take a trip at the trail's circus maze and old attraction graveyard, where you will see broken-down rides, including a Ferris wheel gondola, still waiting for repair from the undead Fix-It crew. Warning, the trail that spans about a mile will also offer a slaughterhouse viewing that's not for the faint at heart. For more info, visit scaretrail.com. Bates Nut Farm and Valley Center has over 50 years of fall celebrations. October attendees can enjoy tractor hay rides, a pumpkin patch, straw bale maze, petting corral, and pony rides. Dogs on a leash are welcome at the farm. You can grab a wheelbarrow and pick from giant and smaller pumpkins such as Big Macs, Ghost Cinderellas, Jack-o'-lanterns, minis, squash, gourds, and other fall decor. There will also be face painting, henna, and live music performances. Find more info at batesnutfarm.biz. Mount Valley Ranch's Pumpkin Patch in Ramona on Highway 78 is open 7 days a week and has a big selection of pumpkins, gourds, and Indian corn. This farm offers a pumpkin patch, corn maze, corn cannon, a petting zoo, spooky decorations, and on Tuesday through Friday afternoons, there are also pony rides. Find more information at mountainvalleyranch.com. Oma's Family Farm Pumpkin Patch in Lakeside requires reservations and ticketing is done online. They have a wide variety of pumpkins to select from, and the pumpkins come in all sizes, from tiny to over 100 pounds. Oma's Family Farm Pumpkin Patch is also offering wagon rides, a cottonseed mountain, a sand pile with toys, playground equipment, petting corral, pedal cart, and tricycle racetrack, and more. For more information, go to omasfamilyfarm.com, where you can also make reservations. And finally, Grossmont Center in La Mesa will be hosting a free safe trick-or-treating option for the kids on October 31st, Halloween night, from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. You can get a complimentary pumpkin bag at the Guest Services Center. The shopping center will be featuring special guest characters, face painting, photos, games, and other activities. This event does require registration, and you can get details at grossmontcenter.com. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions on East County Magazine's Destination East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.